Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 111. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd on this Friday, once again, is the great Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Friday.
The great Alex Cazora. You're buttering me up for this one, aren't you, Dave?
I don't know. We're going to talk some quarterbacks who might have a little bit of difference in opinion in at some point today after I've dive back down into the tape. But regardless, kind of an exciting weekend, right, Alex? I mean, not mandatory. I guess it is mandatory they want to make the team. But the annual Steelers rookie minicamp getting underway in Pittsburgh right now. Looks like 51 players on the initial roster. Of course, a lot of those are tryout players, it looks like. The 8 draft picks, the 9 undrafted free agents, the several first-year players. People have asked, you know, is Cinquez Golston going to take part in this? It doesn't look like it. No, and I didn't think he would because, go back to what Sean Spence, after missing his first 2 years, several years ago, I don't think was eligible to participate in the rookie minicamp. I don't think Golston's going to be taking part in it. And it doesn't look like Gerald Hawkins, the Steelers draft pick from last year, fourth round pick, who missed the season with a shoulder injury, doesn't appear as though he's on this initial roster as well. So, you know, what are we going to learn this weekend, Alex, if anything? And you know, what are you kind of looking forward to?
Yeah, not a ton, and we probably won't learn and hear a lot. We'll just see. Hopefully everyone gets through it healthy. Of course, first of all, it's just the first, I guess, real chance for a risk of injury for somebody. You never want to see that happen. We'll see if they sign any of the tryout guys. A lot of local products. I feel like it's more than usual, and I think, you know, there's a chance they end up bringing somebody on the 90-man roster, whether that's because of injury or someone just showing really well. You know, they signed 4 tryout guys last year, and they've done it in the past. Terrence Garvin, I think Matthew wrote this morning, probably the most famous guy to be a tryout rostered player to make it and stick in the NFL. Marcus Tucker right now on the practice squad, last year, is the best example of that tryout bunch from last year. So always looking for that, any of those roster changes, shakeups, and just seeing how guys react to playing in the NFL, that first taste of NFL speed, the NFL playbook, that's going to be exciting. It's funny that Golston and Hawkins are not eligible for rookie minicamp, but Roy Filon is. I had a reader point that out yesterday. This is Roy Filon's 3rd rookie minicamp, so I had to laugh at that. 2014, 2016, and then, of course, this year, that made me chuckle.
Yeah, he ought to be moving a lot faster than the rest of the players out there. That's for sure. He ought to be the camp. He ought to be the rookie mini camp phenom.
Camp counselor.
Camp counselor. He'd show everybody to the rooms and all that kind of stuff. And look, there should be a poster of Terrence Garvin up somewhere around right there. Because, I mean, if you ever want a perfect example of a guy come in as a tryout player and go on to make a 53-man roster, it's him. And I mean, let's face it, outside of these draft picks and you know, maybe an undrafted linebacker or safety, maybe, you know, something along those lines, these guys are going to be hard-pressed, these tryout players, to not only get signed after this weekend, but it's going to be a long road, obviously, ahead for them. But with that said, you know, go ahead and name a couple of the tryout players that, okay, maybe they have a shot at getting signed after this weekend.
Oh man, let me should have pulled up the minicamp roster beforehand. The number one name on my list though is that Faison Odom kid, the tight end from Fordham, and he just looks good getting off the bus. You know, 6'8", 250. I think he timed pretty well at his pro day. I think he ran in the high 4.7s for how big he is and how much you're gonna pop up out of your 3-point stance in a 40. I think that's pretty impressive. He played well against Navy last year, had a really strong 2015 season, kind of a down year last year. I'm not sure if it was the offense scheme changes or what. I didn't investigate that far, but Odom might be the guy that I think has the best chance. Maybe he beats out Orndorff on the 90-man roster. You know, the other names, it's hard to get this undrafted class. I said I'm not excited about it, relatively speaking. And the tryout guys, you know, there was no one that really popped, out at me. Demond Tucker, the nose tackle from Iowa State.
I was going to go there because you scroll down the measurables with him. You see 5'11", 303. Yeah. You wonder what the hell that looks like. So what I did is I popped on his highlight film yesterday after mm-hmm. the Steelers announced. He's got some quickness to it. I'm not saying there's anything there. I didn't do in-depth study on him, obviously, but if you weren't going to mention Tucker, I was, so that's funny.
The Steelers had a guy like him a couple years ago. I can't remember his name. I don't know if you do, Dave. He was from Southern Mississippi. He was like a 5'11", 300-plus nose tackle that I think he was in camp. I forget his name, but you know, maybe they bring a guy like him. And I saw Tucker. I didn't watch a highlight tape. I didn't watch his Iowa State stuff. If he gets the roster, I will. But I saw him at the Tropical Bowl. I was watching somebody else, and I saw Tucker there at nose tackle at the Tropical Bowl, which is one of the smaller – you know, all-star games for potential draft prospects. So just knowing, you know, there's not really another true nose tackle behind McCullers. You know, they have Phylon, they have Levant Hooks. Neither of them kind of have a nose tackle mold. You know, maybe Tucker makes it. So those are two names. I'll give you a third one, TJ Neal from Auburn, who transferred from Illinois to Auburn last year. Didn't really do much, but had a lot of success at Illinois the seasons prior. Was a starter and a highly productive player. And you think about maybe a lack of depth at inside linebacker. You know, that's the guy that might make his way under a roster.
You know much about Dylan Bushell out of Duquesne, a tryout arm?
He's got good size.
Yeah,
6'5", 330.
What do you got him? 6'3", 211, right, Dylan?
I don't know. I'm looking at the depot, what you typed up. It says 6'5", 330. But,
no, I'm talking about the quarterback out of Duquesne.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the tackle from Youngstown State.
No, Dylan Bushell, the quarterback.
I don't know if he's going to beat out. He'd have to beat out Schuessler for that spot, and I don't think that's a great chance.
I mean, some of these guys, their names will be gone before we know it because they won't be signed after this weekend's over. Well, what about the 6'5", 330? Youngstown.
I don't know much about him either, but he looks good. You know, he'll compete with who's that kid from Columbia? Pace, I think. Kendall Pace, I want to say is his name. Yeah, from Columbia. Obviously, he's got, you know, the high IQ. He wrote an article for MSNBC about money. I saw that a couple years ago. Not that that's relevant really for football, but I did see that. You know, we'll see if any of these guys can. A lot of times, you're going to make one splash play and hope for an injury in front of you. That's how these tryout guys will get onto the roster. I talked to Marcus Tucker last year, the receiver, and he said he caught one like vertical pass downfield. It was a really nice catch, and he told me that literally he thought that was the catch that kind of gave him his contract. So usually you have to make at least one splash play, maybe hope for an injury in front of you, and that's how you get onto the roster. So, you know, that's why I think that Odom kid has the best chance because he's 6'8", 250. They're in shorts, no contact. He better look good. You know, you expect him to. So that's the why I'm kind of circling him above the rest.
And as obvious, you know, as it's obvious, these draft picks will look to wait to hear, you know, what kind of comes out of this rookie minicamp about them. More than anything, we'll get some more in-depth interviews with these guys, I reckon, especially these guys on the bottom end of the roster. I wouldn't expect anything in-depth or for us to learn anything, you know, much at this time of year. Sure, there'll be still probably plenty for us to kind of write about with some quotes with these kids. But I think the biggest thing that you hit on there is, you know, hopefully these guys stay healthy and make it through this weekend. And, and learn a lot. And, you know, Joshua Dobbs is going to be one of those guys. I think he didn't get into town until midnight or so. Dobbs, of course, graduated from the University of Tennessee on Thursday. So kudos to him. And you're going to be a whirlwind weekend for him, I'm sure. So, we've had a few things, roster moves to kind of talk about here. The Steelers have signed a total of four of their eight draft picks right now, all bottom of the end guys. You have Keon Adams, the seventh round pick, Colin Holba, their sixth round pick, their fifth round pick. Brian Allen was actually the first to get signed. And then James Conner, their second of two third round draft picks this year, signed on Thursday. So that now leaves four of the draft picks unsigned, that of course being J.J. Watt. Or J.J. Watt. How many times am I going to do that? T.J. Watt, Juju Smith-Schuster, Cameron Sutton, and
Dobbs.
And Dobbs are the four. And look, those guys, nowadays with these slotted contracts, and especially with the fact that there's probably not much as far as offsets or anything to discuss when it comes to T.J. Watt. I don't know. By the end of this weekend, we might be talking about all these draft picks, Steelers draft picks being under contract there. The Steelers did waive Dremius Smith, running back who spent time on the practice squad last year, the kid out of West Virginia. Look, not surprising there. You know, he's probably lucky that he lasted as long as he did. And let's see, one other bit of news I think that I posted Thursday evening, minor in nature, but Dez Stewart, the wide receiver who was waived, I think last Friday, had cleared waivers. He had been waived injured, cleared waivers, reverted to the Steelers IR. The Steelers waived him again on Thursday with an injury settlement. So that's been all cleared up there. If I missed any news or notes, we'll get into talking a little bit about these undrafted free agents a little bit more. You've done some breakdowns, I think, on the Pitt tight end, Scott Orndorff, and who else did you do? Kelsey, and I'm missing
some. I've written everyone except for Rushel Shell, because he was written about, I believe, by Josh Carney before the draft, and then Christian Brown, the DN from WVU, I still haven't gotten to yet, but we've done reports on the other, what is that, seven or eight undrafted guys.
What'd you find deeper analysis on the Pitt tight end?
You know, I thought he was just a strict blocker. There was no athleticism really at all with him, and he has some straight line speed, and so there's something there. He was a little bit of a vertical seam threat, not huge, but better than what I thought it'd be. Who is a decent blocker, but you know, I like I said, this undrafted class, you know, my perception of the group as a whole coming in, and then after watching most of these guys, really hasn't changed much. And that's unfortunate, because I was not excited about this undrafted class. And, you know, Orndorff's a guy that's a decent blocker that has to sustain his blocks better, but he does not really have any agility, no explosion at the top of his route. And I think it's going to be really tough for him to get on the 53, just because he's not as good a blocker as David Johnson, not as good a receiver as Xavier Grimble. So you're really looking practice squad for Orndorff. You know, I called him a better version of Paul Lang last year, if you remember Paul Lang in training camp, but not super excited about him.
I think the only guy really that you've identified is out of IUP, Ethan Cooper. You had a nice post up about him. I saw one animated GIF or GIF of him. Looked like he's riding a carnival pony.
Yeah, he's an old school. Wait, what's a carnival pony? I don't know, Dave. Explain that to me. You got a, is that a Daveism?
Yeah, pretty much. Kids all over these ponies at carnivals. And that's the way he looked like he was at what was it, a linebacker in the second level.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. We'll go with that. Your reference is going over my head.
Look. You're 20. How old are you?
I'll be 24 here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, and I'm 48 or 49. So we used to. I don't know. It might be a reference from you know, being all over something like a carnival pony. I mean, kids, if you go to carnivals way back in the day, and there was a pony there, kids were all over it. You know. So
yeah, well,
that's where I get that expression from.
We have iPhones now. We don't go to carnivals. So that's Sorry, Dave. We can play a game while we're at a carnival. But anyway, back to Ethan Cooper. Yeah, he's got the nasty old school offensive lineman demeanor. He's able to, you know, finish plays, multiple pancakes. And the one you're talking about was him taking a linebacker, pushing him like 10 yards downfield and burying him into the ground. And that came against Clarion, my alma mater. So IUP whipped on Clarion basically every single year. So it's a good school. He's got tackle guard versatility. Played his first 3 years of guard, kicked to right tackle last year. I see him best as a left guard in the NFL. I don't think he has the lateral quicks to play on the edge, but he's got strong hands, ability to steer guys in the run game, good starting experience, you know, NFL combine invite. So I think that's the one guy that has a great chance to make the practice squad and maybe not the 53 because the position is so crowded.
Yeah, guard for sure in what I've looked at him in your breakdown. A guy that I really, really think, hey, maybe this is a guy. Look, I mean, the Steelers didn't do much as far as offensive linemen go. Not that they needed to during the offseason and the draft and all like that. But, you know, it would be nice to have another, you know, guard, you know, on that practice squad there. So I really like his chance of starting off here, but we know how quickly all this can change. And you know, especially with these undrafted free agents, some of them don't stick right away, but if Cooper stays healthy, you got to like his chances.
Yeah, and that's, you know, people say, you know, oh, Alex, the Steelers undrafted free agent class was so poor because the roster is so good and guys don't want to come here. Well, the best guy they got came to probably the most crowded position on the roster, offensive line, you know, so I don't really buy that argument. And Cooper, while local, he's an Eagles fan. He's not a Steelers fan, so he didn't come here because this is his team forever. So I don't know. I mean, I know it's an undrafted class. I get it. I shouldn't make a big deal out of it. But, you know, I want this to be competitive. I want guys that can make the practice squad, and I think of the class last year, only one guy, Johnny Maxey, you know, made the practice squad coming out of camp. So that's kind of disappointing, and I feel like it's going to be the same story this year with Cooper being this year's Maxey.
I couldn't agree more there. Let's see, did we miss any other news or wrap up or anything else we need to get addressed as far as the rookie mini camp and all goes? Are we ready to move on?
Two quick things. Teresa Varley said the Steelers roster is now at 90 with the release of Dreamus Smith. So just because I was wondering about that. So it sounds like everything's good to go on that end. And some number changes. It's kind of minor. You know, Justin Hunter is going to wear 11. Now Davis is 34. Cody Sensabaugh back to 24. Johnny Maxey, speaking of him, making a number switch. He went from 62 to 95. So he'll take over the infamous Jarvis Jones number.
Alex, I have angered the Yinzernets.
You have. You have.
Well,
question, Dave. Why do you hate Josh Dobbs?
Yeah, exactly. And that seems to be why I have angered the Yinzernets. Look, people, I think when you go, you know, scouting players via their stats is something that you know, you definitely shouldn't do, but a lot of us will use stats as a starting point to try to find some deficiencies in a player's game, and then, you know, take that and try to dig down deeper into the tape to see what's really going on. And, you know, when you look at Joshua Dobbs in his college career, like I did, you know, statistically, and you can't help but notice his third down passing percentage and how low it was. And in fact, Alex, and I wrote this, I think it was over the weekend, of the 9 quarterbacks that wound up being selected in the 2017 NFL draft, Dobbs' third down completion percentage of 48.5% in 2016 was the lowest of those of that group. Now, if that wasn't alarming enough, if you look at it makes you want to go back and look at what actually happened. The fact that he only completed 40.7% of his third down passes when facing 7 or more yards to go, that it sticks out like a sore thumb. And as I wrote, of the 10 quarterbacks who were drafted this year, Dobbs' 40.7% completion rate when facing third down and 7 or more yards was way lower than the 9 other quarterbacks. In fact, the next 2 lowest drafted quarterbacks in that statistical category were just so happened two guys the Steelers had interest in. Brad Kaya at 50.8% and Nathan Peterman at 50.9%. So a 10% gap there. So, you know, what I did, you know, immediately the natives got restless, Alex. They, why are you picking on Dobbs? Why can't we focus on the positive? Nobody wanted to look at that. You know, they don't want to, it's like they don't want to know. Okay. You know me, I don't care. And there is, I don't care if you, I want to know, and you're going to come along for the ride, whether or not you like it or not. And I don't know if you've been following along closely with this, Alex, but I'm three posts deep into this series of going back and looking at all of Dobbs' third down incompletions, not just the third and sevens or more, but all of them. And and I think people after they if they follow along with this and don't try to frame it like Dave hates his draft pick and he's trying to get the Steelers moved to Las Vegas, I think they're going to learn something here because there's a couple things to me that have stuck out and remember we are only. How many games are we into it? 2, 4, I think I'm 7 games into it, so roughly halfway through. You can make an argument, Alex, that of the 30, I think it's 32 incompleted third down passes I've shown already, you can make a strong argument that 10 to 12 of those were very catchable footballs. And in fact, you know, 8 or 9 of those were drops. That's a large percentage of throws. Now, there were about 3 or 4 others that were just, you know, screen plays where Dobbs, you know, just a little bit high. I mean, things that you would think, oh, that's you know, thank God it was only that, you know, kind of correctable short screen passes. Now, did he have some bad decisions in there? I mean, there's some footwork issues. There's some him scrambling, trying to make some plays, throwing off the back foot. But to this point, and remember that I have, you know, roughly half of his games to go. I think it's good that I've done this because I think it's going to show people that, okay, we found some reasons here. A, his receivers didn't help him out. B, you know, I think a lot of his mechanics can be improved on. You'll see him not step into throws and go all arm and a ball sail a little bit. But overall, I think there's some things to be positive about by looking at Josh Dobbs' third down negatives, if that makes sense.
So, really, you're defending Josh Dobbs here. Is that what people have to understand then? Am I correct on that?
Yeah, but God, you know, some of them probably already left and not even going to look and notice all that. But I think, in a nutshell, I think this set of posts is going to end up being a defense for Joshua Dobbs.
And really, you know, you're not coming out with the intent of defending or bashing Dobbs. You are posting the video for anyone to see of every single one of those clips, and people can make their own conclusions. That's why I like what we do at Debo, because we're transparent. We're not going to just tell you, oh, this guy did this wrong, or this is what he did well. We're going to try to show you to the best of our ability. So that's why it's as extensive and transparent as you've done. And of course you're going to look at third downs. You know, if you want to be a quarterback in the NFL, you better make your money on third downs. That's like talking about not wanting to talk about a receiver who can catch or can't catch. You know, it's kind of an important part of your job. So I think it's a huge part of the evaluation. Third down and red zone are maybe the two most important situational football for me that I would look at if I'm evaluating a quarterback. So it's worldly important. And if you struggle on third downs in college, you're going to really struggle in the NFL. So I think it's great work. And, you know, we talk positive about Dobbs. I look back the first couple of, you know, things we talked about him right after the pick. We're all positive. His leadership, his IQ, his off-the-field story, the upside he does have, you know, and we've talked poorly about T.J. Watt and his concerns, or Cam Sutton and his problems, and I think we've been very fair to every player.
Yeah, and look, I didn't know it was in the blogger's handbook that we have to start off all positive and not and barely scratch the negatives. And look, regardless. The reason I wanted to look at this is because I wanted to look at this, plain and simple. Right. When I saw the discrepancy, not only with him having the worst third down completion percentage of the quarterbacks drafted this year from 2016, but the fact that 10% lower on all third downs than the next lowest quarterback that was drafted.
That's huge.
That's huge. I mean, you had to me, and I just didn't want to speculate. Look at three or four plays. I mean, it needed to be looked at. And here's the thing. Now, when we get done with this study, and obviously it's going to be tough to go back all the way through all of Dobbs' college career to continue on, because even as long as the off season is, there are other players that we want to get to both positives and negatives. But Dobbs completed just 50.5% of all third down pass attempts during his college career at Tennessee. Additionally, his college career completion percentage when facing third down and seven or more or longer was 44%. Now, I think that I'm going to be able to sweat because, let's face it, he got the bulk of his playing time the last two seasons, and obviously last season really, really was a good bulk of playing time. I think with some of these drops and catchable footballs, that I'm going to find just in on third downs in the hole from 2016 is going to be enough to sway some of these percentages a little bit to make it look like, okay, he doesn't look as bad as he was. So, I guess in short, boy, I don't know if you read it, Alex. The natives were after me.
I saw some of it.
In some of these original posts and, people just need to, I think, let these play out because, I don't know what I'm going to find, and that's why I framed it as well. And I think the only fair way and best way for us to do this with these prospects is to pick an area that we think there's a huge deficiency in and explore it. Is it easier to do with quarterbacks? Absolutely. A quarterback touches the football as much, right, as he does, and you have all these stats to go along with it. It's not like we have stats of third down missed tackles by outside linebackers.
Right.
We have to kind of pull that out through our own examination of the tape. So, in short, and one other thing I wanted to kind of wrap up with Dobbs here, I think this is very important when you kind of are watching his tape from last season. And by the way, we're blessed because all 14 of those Tennessee games are up on YouTube. So there is no excuse for people not doing their – if you don't believe it, things that I say or Alex say about Dobbs, go look at it. Every last damn one of those 2016 games can be found on YouTube. And here's something that stuck out for me, and I charted through the Tennessee official football website. Have you looked at the different combinations of offensive lines that Dobbs played behind in 2016?
I have not. That does not sound promising, though.
No, that poor kid in that offensive line. It reminds me of the Steelers' offensive line a few years ago, where just all those different combinations. And in fact, I think I counted 8 or 9 different combinations of starting offensive lines in the 14 games that Tennessee played last year. I think the most consistency he had at a position last year on his offensive line was the left guard position with Robertson. Looks like he started all but 2 of Tennessee's games at left guard. The next most stable, I think, position was left tackle. And he had Richmond, who I think was a freshman last year, start the season and then either get injured or bench. And then Kendrick played like four, five, six games. And then Richmond took over back over at left tackle, the freshman, the final four games there. But I did read that they had a lot of injuries on that offensive line last year. So I think that's another thing to kind of keep in mind when you're going back through this Dobbs 2016 tape.
That's a fantastic point, Dave. Really glad you pointed that out because I would have had no idea. What about center? What was the center situation like?
Boy, he started off with a kid named Thomas, two games, then Pruse. Then for a game, and then Weissman for one, two, three, four games, back to Thomas for a game, back to Weissman, back to Thomas, back to Weissman, back to Thomas for the final three games. So that's your center.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I wanted to point out. I mean, can you imagine playing with a different center or a different guy each week? You just can't establish that rhythm.
Yeah, so it looks like three different guys, three different centers Dobbs had in 2016. So
and they kept rotating him, which is the bigger thing. I mean, how many games? What was the biggest streak he had of the same center? In a row, two or three games? Is that what you said?
I think three. I think Weissman had a streak of one, two, three, four. And then Thomas second with a streak of three to close out the season. So,
and who knows if those guys were even able to call protections at the line, or was that all on Dobbs to do with different guys? I mean, that's like a pitcher having a different catcher. It's weird.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I don't know. I remember reading. I think that Richmond, the left tackle, was a freshman. I can't tell you which of these other kids were, freshman, sophomore, junior. I haven't gone that deep into it yet, but I don't think it matters, though, right? I
mean, yeah.
And people will say, and here's the thing that pointed out to me on Twitter, oh, wide receivers are going to have drops. I'm sure the other quarterbacks had drops. I'm not disputing the fact that Joshua Dobbs was not the only, other quarterbacks had drops that they were dealing with. However, Dobbs had a lot of catchable footballs that were not caught on third down, and this is halfway through my study, and I would be surprised. I'm not saying it's, as I like to say, impossible, for other quarterbacks to have suffered as many drops or percentage of drops on third down. I was pretty shocked to see all these balls that just weren't caught for either, drops or hit as they're trying to catch it or the ball slightly, being thrown behind them, but still a catchable football. It's going to be interesting to watch the rest of this series play out. And I hope people, it's only got two or three posts left in it after today. I hope people do that. So, now it almost sounds like I'm a Joshua Dobbs fanboy.
And you're going to yell that for that. Now you're a fanboy.
Right, exactly.
What are you doing?
Yeah, we need to see more interceptions, Dave. That kind of thing. I think at this point, though, right now, and trust me, I could probably quote you every third down play Joshua Dobbs played last season. All of his interceptions, I could probably quote you as long, in addition to all of his deep completions. With all that said, I'm probably right now the bigger fan of Dobbs than you are, yes?
Probably, but you've taken the deeper dive, and so your analysis is going to be more, credible than mine. It's not about, again, for me, it's less about Dobbs, the player, because there are things I like about him. It's about the position and how tough it is to be a number three quarterback without a true role and really no idea what the future is supposed to be for Josh Dobbs.
And Jedi Haley talked to Missy Matthews.
So you got the beard back?
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. I love it. Absolutely. I've loved Todd Haley's meth addict looks over the years. I really have. I can relate to it as a person who doesn't shower very much myself.
you were scaring me there. You talk about meth addict. You said, I can relate. I got, oh, Dave,
we have
intervention for you.
Let's not go there. But I get a kick out of Todd Haley's looks over the years since being with us. Even going back to his time with Kansas City, it looked like Todd Haley Haley needed a place to stay. but regardless, Jedi Haley talked to Missy Matthews recently and talked about all three of the Steelers' offensive draft picks. And in a nutshell, said, look, I mean, Josh Dobbs is going to be hard for him to get snaps. Later rather than sooner. I mean, obviously, Joshua Dobbs is going to be big man on campus this weekend at Steelers rookie minicamp. And I hope there's some positive things that come out of that, because moving on into OTAs and the mandatory minicamps and, of course, into training camp, Joshua Dobbs is not going to get many snaps. So, he's going to be, of course, thrown into the fire during the preseason and have to make what he can out of that. But you're right. I mean, any development that Joshua Dobbs is going to make, it's going to be, I think, expected to be very incrementally, and a lot of it's going to have to be mentally processed through mental reps.
Right, and that's going to be fine with him. I have no doubt he'll be able to absorb the playbook well and take those mental reps. But you know, mental reps are great and all, but you got to do it on the field. And you know, he's going to have the opportunity in training camp in the preseason, and he should have a very Landry Jones-like chance to do that in terms of play time, which we've talked about before, which means a lot of opportunity. But once the regular season starts, you know, that well dries up, and he's going to be running scout team most of the year. And when you run scout team, you're generally not running your plays. You're running another team's plays and their, you know, concepts that they like to do on tape, because you have to simulate the other team's offense for the defense. So that's going to be his role, and reps are going to be tough to come by. You know, if there's an injury, of course, then he's going to get, you know, even as number two, it's going to be tough, but you're going to have some opportunity. But, you know, it's just – I don't want to rehash it all. I know we've talked about it before, but this is a team that's very likely to draft another quarterback even higher within the next year or two. I mean, for all we know, after this year, Ben goes to Colbert and Tomlin, says, guys, you know, 2018 is going to be my last year. At least I'm pretty confident in that. Well, that could very well mean the Steelers end up taking a quarterback, and rightfully so, take a quarterback within the first, you know, two rounds. And that leaves Dobbs as odd man out, basically, you know. So that's just a concern there. And I think he has talent, and I think he can compete, and I think he'll have a decent preseason for a rookie. But we just – I don't know what his future is. I mean, again, I think the upside for him is the next Landry Jones, maybe a slightly better version of it. But, you know, the team's already said they don't view him as the future, and it's hard to think that they ever really did as a fourth-round pick. You know, you're not going to put all your eggs into a fourth-round guy.
I think upside, and the thing that everybody listening to this podcast right now should be thinking about with Joshua Dobbs is us during the preseason talking about, man, Joshua Dobbs was not awful at all.
Is that what your goal is? Is that what you're saying?
I think if we're talking about Josh Dobbs was not awful, that's a great sign.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I
yeah.
mean, for obvious reasons. But, you know, there's already things in my head, you know, from looking at his tape, you know, watching kind of his footwork. And, you know, I'm not sure if you saw it, but Greg Cosell, I recently posted Greg Cosell's, I think it was his evaluation of Dobbs way back around the the combine time, and yeah, I think Greg Cosell was kind of on in there, and it's going to be. And here's the thing that I think is hard to tell on tape with quarterbacks. And Alex, you have been at Senior Bowls, you know, two of them in the past practices, so maybe you can relate to this. Is it easier to tell velocity in person as opposed to TV?
Yeah, for sure. It's not about the visual. It's about the, you know, what you hear. You can hear the pop as the receiver catches it. And if you have someone that has a lot of zip, you get that loud kind of, you know, again, pop like, go back to baseball, a pitcher throwing into the mid of a catcher. You hear that sound, and that kind of tells you velocity and how well a guy's slinging it. So, yes, I think that's a great point. Velocity is better in person than it is on tape.
And Cosell, who I've got a lot of respect for Greg Cosell, but I mean, he, like the rest of us, he misses, but I think he's good when it comes to quarterbacks. Here's what he says about weaknesses with Dobbs. He says a little bit of a pusher throwing the ball, a tight throwing motion that limits his ability to drive the ball with velocity. Did not throw with core torque and weight transfer, which also and excuse me, I don't have, I'm trying to read something and I'm 49 years old and I don't have my reading glasses on. did not throw with core torque and weight transfer, which also limited velocity. Not a natural thrower. Arm strength present some. Arm strength presents some limitations. Balance and footwork in the pocket must be cleared up and become more consistent. Inconsistency, accuracy, a concern with erratic ball placement on too many routine throws.
That sounds, yeah. I mean, Guy Cosell's, I think, one of the best in the business, to be honest. So, you know, you trust his evaluation. For me, though, what Landry Jones got in trouble with early in his career was just snap-to-snap consistency. And that's what we have to see with Dobbs, making the five-yard throw perfect every time. The screen pass, the swing pass, not sailing over guys' heads. That's what happened with Landry Jones. And as he progressed, he became more consistent with that. So just doing the little things right every single time. And that's going to be the big thing. Initially, I want to see with Josh Dobbs.
All right, continuing on with the I Hate Josh Dobbs edition of the Terrible Podcast. What, you know, I think we've spent enough time on Dobbs now, and once again, I hope people listening, look, it's easy for you to catch up on this series real quick if you haven't seen it on Dobbs. Watch the videos and see if the videos of those plays match my description. I feel pretty confident that you're going to agree with about 98% of what I wrote there. And I think a lot of you pay special mind to, when we get done with this, I'm going to recap all this in one final post, and I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. With that said, where do you want to move next, Alex?
No, again, back to the undrafted free agents. No one else really stuck out. Keith Kelsey from Louisville, the inside linebacker, might have the best chance to stick just because inside linebacker is a weaker spot depth-wise. But you've seen the reports. I'm sure most of you have. I'm not excited about this group. So, you know, that's, again, unfortunate in my mind.
You had a bit of a stirring post, I think, this past week talking about the area the Steelers didn't address, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's just that safety hybrid spot. And it's a position the Steelers wanted to address, I think, pretty clearly looking at the top-tier guys. And this goes back to what I said in the pre-draft process, was that if they were going to take a safety, it was going to be within the first two rounds or they weren't going to do it at all because they wanted that top-tier guy to be that 6 DB on the field, and it was a perfect opportunity to do so, transitioning from the Lawrence Timmons era. Obviously did not happen, and, you know, I wish we could have the time machine or the crystal ball to see if Josh Jones would have been the guy in the second round had he not gone one pick ahead to Green Bay. But, you know, it's still the one position that they've not been able to address in any capacity, and it's going to be harder for them to run a lot of dime defense this year.
Now, I'm not going to push this idea or narrative much, I don't think, much past today. But, you know, we heard Keith Butler sit down with Missy Matthews recently talking about, I'm drawing a blank, fifth round draft pick,
Brian Allen.
And talking about how, you know, he kind of thinks of, when he thinks of Brian Allen, he thinks of Sean Davis. You know, some similarities there, and I've already thrown it out once a little bit, you know, being as how Allen did play some very, very, very limited safety at Utah. Is there any possibility here this could be kind of a dime, you know, dime safety slot guy, you know, kind of like Eric Rowe, kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked about the Josh Jones, those kind of type players. Any chance that happens?
I think there's potential for that down the road, but I think it's going to be hard to get that in year one because he's such a raw guy, and him trying to play in all that space covering top athletes, I think that's just an insane assignment to give a rookie unless he really shows up well at Latrobe. But I think there's potential for that down the road, but, you know, this was obviously a thing the Steelers wanted to implement in year one. That's why they wanted to look at first, second-round talents, guys that they felt and would be compelled to play right away. So I don't think Allen's that guy this year, and that's kind of what I'm looking for the help. So
it's either
Robert Golden or bust.
All right, but with a bigger guy like that, let's assume, which is dangerous to do right now, assume Brian Allen makes to 53. Mm-hmm. What about, you know, putting them on big tight ends? I mean, bigger guys. I mean, obviously, you're not, you know, right out of the chute, you're not going to want him on a Wes Welker or
Right.
things of that nature. But what about bigger bodied slot guys?
And that's what Sean Davis got in trouble with last year. They were trying to play in the slot and play in a lot more space than he did as the outside, you know, boundary or field cornerback. So
right.
I think
and,
it's a.
And who was that that turned him around early? In the early game?
Bolden. Wasn't it Anquan Bolden
yeah,
in
yeah,
the preseason?
It was Bolden, wasn't it?
Right, and that's not exactly fleet of foot, Anquan Bolden. So that's a welcome to the NFL moment. So I think on paper it looks good because you have a 6'3", 215 corner matching up against the 6'5", you know, 245 tight end. That's about as good as you're going to get as a defense for an answer on paper. But I think for a rookie cornerback to try to play in all that space, and just the concept of the space alone, let alone going against the top athlete, whether that's a Travis Kelce, a Rob Gronkowski, Kyle Rudolph, whoever – I think that's asking a lot, and I'm not comfortable with that, at least, you know, right now.
Right, and I'm thinking of Brian Allen more of a big bodied potential guy because, I mean, let's face it, are anybody excited to see Cam Sutton in the slot against, say, Gronk?
Well, no, but, you know, Sutton would cover an Edelman, for example. He
right.
wouldn't be matched up against
right.
a Gronk. So, you know, it's just a question of who's your answer for that tight end. I mean, you have Tyler Eifert you're going to see twice a year, which I know the Steelers have kind of contained him in the past, but he's still always a tough guy to deal with. You know, now you're going to see David Njoku twice a year. Who's your answer for that? And you're going to be on the schedule. You got Gronk in week 15. You got Travis Kelce again. You know, I went through the list in that post. Kyle Rudolph. I forget some of the other names out there, but it's
my
a challenge.
My point being, though, is you know, I think we're going to see some of these teams with two tight ends, try to do some more things. You know, I mean, the Patriots are a big example of that. Now, obviously, losing Gronk, they still had Bennett last year, and had to get away from kind of the things that they like to do with two tight ends. But what about the teams that do have? I mean, you go back to the Bengals a few years ago, when Hugh Jackson was there, early on in Eifert's career, they were able to do some really creative stuff with two tight ends.
Sure, and that's my point is, how do you defend, you know, those that empty set with two tight ends? You know, how do you do that?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. I mean,
right.
And that's why I threw out there, I mean, how many of us really want to see a Cam Sutton on, you know, a Gronk? Should that?
Of course, right. But I'm saying, what is the solution then, Dave? I mean, I think we agree, but what is the solution
right.
to dealing with these tight ends?
Yeah, you need a big body guy, I think, that can turn
right.
and run. You know,
right.
can Sean Davis be that guy? I don't know, but I mean, there are concerns with the way that. You hate to keep going back to the Patriots, but that's the question everybody has right now. What are we going to do, or what are the Steelers going to do to beat the Patriots right now? And I mm-hmm. think you got to play more man. I think you got to jam and get these guys, mess up their timing off the line of scrimmage, and then you've got to be able to do all of that with a four-man pass rush. And
mm-hmm.
Steelers couldn't do that, obviously, in the playoffs, and Tom Brady ate them alive. You know what? You were damned if you do, damned if you didn't last year during the AFC Championship game. So you know what? I would have just left my guys out there on an island in man a little bit more and said,
mm-hmm.
you know, go have at it if you can beat it. You know?
Right, and for me, I think it goes back to pattern matching. I think that's the perfect blend between the zone and the man concepts. I think pattern matching solves a lot of problems. It's always supposed to, in theory, put you in good situations. It's tough to teach, especially for younger guys, because it is such a complicated, you know, varied concept. But I hope to see more of those concepts this year, being able to, you know, essentially pattern matching, changing your coverage and who covers who based on the receiver's route tree and the route concepts that get presented to you.
And you think with Ross Cockrell and Cam Sutton, you have the football IQ to be able to, you know, handle all that. Now, as far as Artie Burns goes, I'm not as big a fan of his football IQ as I am the other two that I mentioned there. It took a little bit for Artie to learn crack and replace, right?
mm-hmm. Yeah, Miami, that first time was not good last year.
Because, I mean, there's some things that you got to be able to recognize as soon as you see them. And, you know, and it goes for pattern matching as well, too. And look, I mean, I'm not trying to knock Artie Burns. I'm just trying to say when it comes to football IQ and those guys in the secondary, you know, right now he's down on the totem pole, in my opinion. So hopefully he can improve that. Hopefully they can do more pattern matching this season as well. All right, anything else on your mind?
I think that's everything. I was trying to think if I had anything else big. We'll keep you posted on any rookie minicamp signings. That'll run through, what is that, Sunday is the final day. We'll see if anyone gets signed. I just had a real quick post up this morning, though. I'm really excited for Juju Smith-Schuster to get to work with Richard Mann. You know, you and I alike are big Richard Mann fans, and I can't think of anything more valuable than at least getting 1 year to work with Mann, who's been coaching receivers since 1970. That's such a crazy thought to me. No one ever talks about how long he's been in football and what he's meant to different players out there. So even if it is for 1 year, assuming this is really Mann's final year, which we'll see, I can't think of any better teacher for Smith-Schuster than Richard Mann.
I was two when he started.
Oh my goodness. He can still coach you today, Dave. Get on the field.
I have no short area. My short area quickness revolves around getting off the toilet. That's about it. The winner of Steelers Depot 2017 mock draft contest. It was Denny Dirtschulz, I believe. Denny, congratulations to you. He had some pretty good picks. He had T.J. Watt up high in the first round. He had Cameron Sutton mixed in his picks. He was correct with Joshua Dobbs and Keon Adams. I mean, that's something. For you get a seventh round pick right in the right spot, that's usually the difference between what wins and loses these contests. He also had, let's see, who else did he have? He had James Conner mixed in with his picks as well. So congratulations to him. Congratulations to the guys that came in second: Todd Hall, Garrett Daniel Goldberg, and David Jones. Congratulations to those guys, and your prizes will be going out here very, very near future. And I think Denny's already been paid his as well. We'll do this again next year. We have some questions, do we not, Alex, for today's podcast?
We do. You want me to fire them off for you here?
Yeah, let's fire them
off.
All
right. I got two of them for you guys. I liked your hashtag today, why yins hate dogs. this one comes from Kratos at the Muns. He says, do you guys believe Bud makes a big leap or no this year? So do pretty big leap.
What do you call him? Big leap. I think he can hit lower level double digit numbers, but I'm expecting 8 to 10 snaps with him. The big thing with him, let's just keep him on the field and healthy. He's evidently working with a pass rushing specialist during the offseason. All the intangibles are there. We just got to see him kind of put it all together right now. And this being his third season, we need to see it. So I guess it depends on what you define as big jump. You know, I'm not expecting 12, 13, 14 sacks out of him, but I think we could see something like, 8 to 10?
I think he can hit 10. I'll give you two words here, Dave. Chuck Smith, that is the pass rush specialist that he is working with. Chuck Smith, it might be the best guy in the business if you want to learn how to be a great pass rusher. Tuitt's worked with him in the past. Vic Beasley's worked with him. I mean, Chuck Smith's resume is a country mile wide or long. So, yeah, I think he can hit 10 sacks. He's got to make sure he finds that a real true go-to move, but provided, you know, health positive, you know, if he's on the good side of that, I think he can do it. I think it's going to be a really big year and a really good year for Bud Dupree.
You know what I want to be talking about with Bud is not so much sacks. I want us to be talking about, man, did you see the pressure that that Bud Dupree was able to put on ex quarterback in this game?
Right.
Nowadays in today's NFL, with that ball coming out in 2.67 seconds on average, It's hard to get to the quarterback quick.
Right.
A lot of sacks sometimes are going to end up being garbage related late in games where quarterbacks are third down and you have them behind the chains and you'd be able to send the house after them. I want us to be talking about with Bud Dupree about first half meaningful quarterback pressures that end up in balls being forced and picked off and whatnot.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. But nothing better than a sack, though, being able to finish that play and put teams in now second and long, third and long, whatever the case is. But regardless, I think it's going to be a big year for him because I think he's got the physical tools. I think the game slowed down for him. I think in one sense, not that it was necessarily a good thing overall, but him missing the first half of last year allowed him to kind of soak the game in mentally and take some of those mental reps because he got thrown into the fire right away in his rookie season, which isn't how the Steelers always wanted to operate in the past. So in that sense, maybe he grew in that part of the game. And he's had four and a half sacks in limited action rookie year, had four sacks. So I think he can definitely get, 10 with a full year under his belt, his third year in the league.
If he gets 12, everybody should be doing
oh yeah
somersaults, I think.
trying to, at least. I don't know if I can pull one off, right. But I'll try.
And look, I don't think it's not like, I mean, him getting 12, I wouldn't relate to water being turned into wine, but it would definitely be a nice problem to have.
Yep. Second question. Adam Grego says, what concerns you more, being one injury away from Medicevich, Steven Johnson starting, or Golden Dangerfield?
You know which way I'm going with this.
Inside the inside linebacker?
I'm more nervous about the inside linebacker right now.
Me too.
Golden and Dangerfield, obviously, not the best depth. I like what Dangerfield did during, what was it, the start against Kansas City?
Mm-hmm.
His head probably was spinning, but he's been around the Steelers long enough that one would think he should know what's going on. Golden, of course, you pointed out several times the issues, the coverage issues that Golden has in the middle of the field areas particularly, but as a deep safety cover two guy, probably a little bit better, right? Of a player. I'm more concerned about getting in a situation where Steven Johnson, Tyler Matakavich, or let's say an LJ Fort makes the final 53, has to get on the field. Do you concur?
I probably would agree, but let me play devil's advocate and say that if Matakevich or Johnson had to come in, I think Matakevich especially, he'd be the next man up in all likelihood, would be a good two-down guy. We saw what he did against Miami last year in his quarter and a half action, and you can kind of maybe mask that a little bit by maybe using Golden as that dime guy. Now, I know I just talked about the issues that we have with trying to find that guy, but that might, you at least have an alternative where you can throw in a different name. With Golden Dangerfield, you can't hide safeties. They're gonna, there's no replacement for them. There's not a whole lot of things you can do schematically to cover for them. And so I think looking at it positionally, would you rather lose the inside linebacker or the safety? I might argue, you'd rather lose the inside linebacker because you can replace with a safety you can do similar while giving you more athleticism than Medicavich or Steven Johnson.
Now that you've entertained and danced with a devil, though, what's your choice?
I'd still rather have Golden or Dangerfield start. I'm with you. I think the inside linebacker, and especially if that means you're – now, I guess the question is, what safety are you losing? Are you losing Shazier or Vince Williams? If you're going from Vince Williams to Matakevich or Shazier to Matakevich, it's a different story. So I know that that's not what Adam asked. He's just asking more general, but maybe that's an important part of the question,
right,
too.
And I think it is because knock on wood, I'd much rather go from, I think, Williams to Matakevich.
Of course, yeah.
Shazier is obviously your most athletic inside linebacker, and a guy, boy, you want to talk about a guy that even if he chooses the wrong gap can still get a tackle for loss. And we've seen Shazier do that, right? Bad reads, good plays.
Well, I think sometimes it's intentional, though, that he'll run behind the pulling guard instead of taking him head on because he knows he has the athleticism to be able to close and get to the back in the backfield in time. So I think honestly it's an intentional thing the coaches let him do because he has that rare athleticism where he can trail the guard and not worry about having to take him on and shed the block and still make the play.
And then we've seen Vince Williams, though, try to take the back door, too. And play.
Doesn't work as well.
No, it doesn't. All right, those are some great questions there. Thanks for participating today with that on Twitter. Anything else, Alex, before we get on out of here on this Friday?
I think that's everything. We'll talk to you Monday about rookie minicamp. And again, fingers crossed, do a rain dance, whatever you got to do. Everyone stays healthy. Number one goal.
Absolutely. All right, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazora on Twitter at Alex_Cazora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. We've actually received a couple of donations this past week as well. Thank you for that. Also, if you just want to help out getting the word out about what we do, if you want to something simple as a retweet on Twitter, either my account or Alex's account, or you tweeting it out yourself from something that you find on Steelers Depot helps the cause, as does likes on Facebook and everything that goes on along with that as well. So once again, appreciate all the support. It's been a tremendous off season for us so far. We hope to continue the coverage, or we will continue the coverage on through this rookie mini camp on into the rest of the off season. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.